I have just a few words to share with you as we start our podcast off today. I was driving with my wife in the car today, and she read something off of Instagram and reminded me that it was 6 years ago today that Rick and Kay Warren lost their son, Matthew. Matthew was struggling with mental illness for his entire life, and Rick and Kay suffered through it with him and tried so desperately to help him, their whole family, their whole church. And unfortunately, 6 years ago, they lost Matthew. And I want to recognize that today because on today's episode, which is being released on the 6th anniversary, and I didn't realize this until this afternoon. I remember that afternoon. I remember opening up my laptop and going to a news site and seeing at the top of the fold that Rick and Kay Warren's son had died of suicide. And I remember sitting at the dining room table, and I love Rick and his entire church and what they've done for the church around America and around the world. And I was in shock. I understood what that meant. I didn't feel what that meant because as I sat there, I had all four of my kids still with me. But I understood here was a guy in the spotlight in his life, and now he was going to have to not only go through the most difficult thing I believe a parent can go through, but have to go through it in public. And as we all watched over those coming months and years, Rick and Kay did it with a grace and a poise and a class that is so characteristic of them. So on today's podcast, Johnny and I joke about Rick. We've called him Slick Rick in the past, and these are all terms of endearment. Rick is a joker. He's got a great sense of humor. And Johnny and I, of course, you know, in the spirit of that, we're the same way. And we don't hold back when it comes to anybody. We have fun. And I just want to recognize as we start this episode off that today is a tough day for Rick and Kay. And she put this on her Instagram post. Here's what she wrote. She said, "Matthew David Warren, July 18th, 1985 to April 5th, 2013. She wrote, "I'll see you in just a little while. I can't wait to hold you again. You will run to meet me whole, healed, and in your right mind. Until then, you will be in my heart always." We had Kay Warren on an episode almost 2 years ago, and the title of that episode was How to Have a Mental Illness Literate Church. If you search for 200 Churches and Kay Warren, if you've not listened to that episode, oh my goodness, such a powerful episode. I was very nervous about that episode because I hurt so much for them as parents and for her as a mom. But we are going to forge now, having remembered Matthew and recognized Rick and Kay. We joke about Rick. We love him. We respect him. He has been an honorable pastor for just about 40 years now of Saddleback Church. He's got a great reputation and a great ministry. But today we talk to one of his executive assistants, and we get a little peek into Henty's world. He's the executive assistant, and through him into the ministry of Saddleback and the life of Rick Warren. And in the future, I believe we'll have a chance to talk with Rick, and he'll have a chance to talk with you as a small church pastor. But here we go with episode 319. Welcome to episode 319 of the 200 Churches podcast.
Putting ministry in the hands of our people, you know, and not just hoarding it to ourselves. And so I think that's really the way that Saddleback is handing off ministry to the next generation, is that we're creating a culture where we're saying like, hey, we're not just interested in pastors doing ministry. We are a church of ministers. Everyone, I'm thinking of 1 Peter 2, you know, like we're all called to this royal priesthood. You know, we're all called, like 2 Corinthians 5, to be ambassadors for Christ. Naturally, then, it's not just pastors who are called to that, but it's to our people.
Welcome to the 200 Churches Podcast. We're passionate about providing ministry encouragement to pastors of small churches. We release a brand new episode every Wednesday to do just that for you, all of our small church pastor friends. Now, here are two guys who are definitely better together. Friends, pastors, and podcast partners, Jeff and Johnny.
This is the 200 Churches Podcast. My name is Johnny Craig, and I am here in the opulent and luxurious digital sound studio with my friend and podcast partner,
Jeff Cady. Thank you, Johnny. Good to be with you.
Jeff, it is always a good day when I'm talking to you, my friend. How are you feeling
shucks.
These days? You look like half of yourself today.
I'm half the man I used to be.
Every time I see you, you look skinnier. I'm concerned.
65 pounds, baby.
Oh, my gosh. You've lost my son, Joseph, I think. That's about how much Joseph weighs.
I love it. It's starting to get fun now, though.
Yeah. See? You're not losing your breath on a walk around the block anymore, are you?
No. In fact, last night we had a big to-do at the church where we had a movie for all the kids and actually the whole church family.
Okay.
We previewed Pilgrim's Progress that's coming out in theaters.
Oh, sure.
Soon.
Yeah, yeah.
And afterwards, we had to vacuum up all the popcorn. So I was part of that, and we were stacking chairs. And I said to my son, Mitch, man, Mitch, 6 months ago, I'd be sweating bullets right now.
Oh, yeah.
I never even sweat a drop through the whole thing.
Oh, my goodness.
It was awesome.
Oh, my goodness. I love hearing that, Jeff. I love hearing that so much.
Yeah. Yeah. So, Johnny, who's our guest today?
I was about to tie it into your story that you just told, actually, Jeff, because I was going to say, lest anyone think that Jeff is no longer a small church pastor just because his church is larger than 200.
Amen.
He's stacking chairs and vacuuming. We talked today to a man named Henty, last name nearly unpronounceable, Vander Mentwe or something along those lines.
Vander Meerwe.
Vander Meerwe, there we go. And Henty works for a man who I promise you has not vacuumed up popcorn or stacked chairs in a long, long time. He works for Rick Warren.
It's been a few years, but I think one of Rick's famous stories is when they were 5 or 9 years into their church plant, and he was unloading one of the trailers for, you know, they had to set up church
in the
public school every Sunday morning. And as he was rolling a two-wheel dolly toward up the sidewalk, he was saying, God, you know, every other pastor has their own church. When are you going to give us our own church? So I think he did it for enough years that he's more years than I ever would have had to. So
There you go. I wouldn't say a bad word about Rick Warren. I won't say a bad word about him. Rick Warren, Henty Works. He's Rick Warren's executive assistant, and he was kind enough to join us. And I found this conversation, Jeff, to be really interesting to hear about the inner workings of an organization that is that big. It's a church, but it's also a gigantic organization. And so this conversation I thought was really interesting from that perspective, because guys like us, men and women like us who are in churches that are, you know, 400 or less, we have no idea about what it takes to run an organization that big.
Well, and as we talked to him, Rick Warren's personality was popping up all over the place to me, you know, having followed him for so long. And yet what I was surprised about was Henty's ability to articulate. I mean, the kid's 25 years old.
Yeah.
And that's one sharp dude right there.
Yeah, he did a great job.
Not only is he sharp, but he's also very passionate and very spiritual.
So you might think to yourself. Yeah, you might think to yourself, what could this possibly have to do with me, a small church pastor? But I promise you, we brought it back. We always do to the small church, and there will be in this episode a lot of really useful content for you as you think about leading your small church. So let's get to it. This is our conversation with Henty. This is Henty.
Henty, welcome to the 200 Churches Podcast. I don't know your last name well enough to say it on the recording.
That's all right. It's Fundamatova, but I figured my first name is difficult enough for people to say. So I just leave them with that.
Well, it's easy, but how would you say your last name if you ever had to say it?
It depends on who I'm around. If I'm around people that I know would have difficulty with, I just say Vandermeer or Vandermeerwe, and then just kind of let them sit there with it. But the actual way is Funimatva. And so that's it's picking up some of the Afrikaans different accent marks on there. I don't torture anyone with that.
I like the Henty. I've never seen that before. I like the Henty as a first name. That probably does set you apart quite a bit. Is that a more common name in South Africa, though?
It's not, unfortunately. My dad has the name, and so I got it from him. So I guess for us, it's a family name. But I think there's a couple authors with the last name Henty, but no one... I guess no one with it. I don't know. I've never met anyone else except for my dad with the same name.
So Henty, you and I have been emailing back and forth for what, 2 years now?
Quite a while. Yeah, we have.
Well, share with our listeners who you are, what you do, and why you are on the podcast as best as you know.
Well, I'm executive assistant to Pastor Rick Warren at Saddleback Church, and I started in this role about 8 months ago. But I guess when it comes to me, I love the church. I love the local church. I love the Bible, and that's why I'm serving in the church now.
So, Henty, what brings you from South Africa to Southern California?
Yeah, so I moved over to the States in 2004. So I moved over with my mom and my older brother, and so she was getting remarried to a guy out here. And so that kind of moved us all the way across the world. My mom kind of just sold everything she had and to make it out here. And so then... Yeah, I've been living in California for almost 15 years now. Not a usual way of moving over, but yeah, that's kind of how we ended up living out here in California.
And did you land right there in that area where Saddleback is? How long have you attended the church?
Actually, we moved to a smaller town called Redlands. It's about 40 miles east of Lake Forest. And so I went to middle school and high school out there, and then went to college in Riverside, California, and then after that, moved out to Kentucky for 2 years, and then ended up, you know, getting the role here at Saddleback, and so I've been at Saddleback now for about 2 years.
Very nice.
You've only been working for Rick in that role for 8 months, so what did you do before that?
Yeah, so I was actually working with Pastor Tom Holliday, so him and Buddy Owens, I was assisting both of them. And so I worked very closely with Rick's team. His two assistants before me, they both ended up being my roommates. And so we ended up, I kind of got roped into, just by association, into a lot of the projects they would do over Easter, just because, you know, it takes a big team to like pull off some of the tasks that we do. So I was available a lot of times to help them. And so that's kind of how I got associated with the role and also with the team. And then when they transitioned out, it was just natural for me to transition in. To replace them.
Cool. So what are the types of things that you do in your role?
That is a great question. it really varies from day to day, and also it varies really in Rick's season of life. And so I'm sure, as probably many of the listeners will know, you know, recently in the past about year and a half, Rick's been struggling with his health, and so obviously, you know, we're not traveling around the world like we used to, but a lot of it is planning, filming, you know, for our weekend services, and a lot of it is really behind scenes kind of communication, organizing meetings. I think a large part of my job is just being, you know, the connecting point between our staff and Rick, and trying to keep the communication lines open there, and communicating information from Rick to other people. And so there's some days where you know, some of it is purely errand running, like any assistant will know. But then some of it is, you know, it's calendar stuff, it's administrative stuff. But then there's also a large part of it, which is it's relational, and you're developing relationships with staff members. So when you have to make big asks, you know, it's not you know, like you're just asking them point blank, but there's a relationship there, so they're able to understand. It's a matter of just, you know, developing relationships so that people are ready to go all out, I guess, for, you know, for a certain event or a certain ask that we have to make. So I think that's the part of my job that I really enjoy the most, is developing those relationships and getting to know different people on staff, and yeah, getting them ready for when Rick is going to make an ask of them.
So Henty, as we're talking, I'm trying to imagine the reality of this large of an organization. The majority of pastors that you're talking to right now are in churches of 200 people or less. I don't think that we can quite get a sense of the scope and the scale of what you have going on over there. Is Rick's office almost insular? Like, it has its own inner mechanics, and then it has to interface with other offices outside of it, almost like in a bureaucratic sense? Or is it more organic than that throughout the organization?
That's a great question, in that it can be bureaucratic, but in other ways it's a little bit more organic than that. The thing is that there's so many lines of communication coming into our office. That's why we have our own office of the pastor, is that because the amount of people that are trying to make contact with Rick is such a high number, that if it was just Rick who was trying to handle it, he would just be inundated with people trying to get in contact with him, all for really good reasons. They're either wanting to encourage him or ask him to speak somewhere, or just want some help or some encouragement from him. And so part of our management of the communication is that we have a lady on our team who specifically just works with, going through emails and giving that personalized touch, so that people can still make a connection with Rick in a very personal way. But it's not delayed in a way. And so that's because sometimes a lot of the stuff is time sensitive. And so, but even within our staff, it's not, I don't know if I'm comfortable with the word bureaucratic.
I don't mean that in a negative sense. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. There are some processes where it's like, we're able to, because we're closer with Rick, and we have a bit of a better idea, or at least we think we have, because our goal is to help Rick to accomplish what he sees as the vision that God's putting on his heart. And so sometimes, something will come up and someone has an idea, and we're able to know immediately off the bat, like, hey, this is a great idea, but this isn't going to line up exactly with what, with where Rick is wanting to go with things. And so we're able to redirect them. Yeah. So, but a lot of times Rick is communicating with the elders. And so I would say, in a way, like, the church it runs on its own. And then we're constantly making course corrections as we're kind of accomplishing, the five purposes, through our class system and through what our church is doing through our weekend services. And Rick is speaking into that all the time. So there definitely is a lot of organic conversation going on. But sometimes, there's just a certain order of how, we have to go about certain things. And once again, it's a matter of, for us, it's for conserving Rick's energy, and making sure that we're helping him to, to do the things that he feels like God is calling him to do in a particular season.
So, Henty, I haven't really been following very closely. Is it, can you say how he's doing? I know that he was in the hospital because he put out that picture between him and Rick Muchow, but that's really all that I've seen.
I feel like I think I'm okay to share some of this, just because it's stuff that he shared with our church at Saddleback on stage. And about a year and a half ago, Rick's had this it's not a disorder, but it's where, when the adrenaline gets going in his brain, it's really difficult for his brain to shut down. And so it really affects his sleep. And about a year and a half ago, some of the treatment that he was on was just stopped working. And so, so I remember one week Rick slept like 15, 14 hours the whole week. So he's sleep deprived, yet, he's still trying to deal with these things. And so that's been a part of it. That's been a part of the struggle. And then, so he's been recovering from some of that. And but then about 5 or 6 months ago, he ended up suffering a perforation in his intestine. So I had to go into emergency surgery for that. And so this last surgery that Rick just had was to remove a part of his colon. And so so he says, now I'm a semicolon now.
Sounds like Rick.
That's his line with everyone. But right now he's doing much, much better. He's getting a lot higher quality sleep, he's getting a lot more sleep, and he's recovering. And, but his energy is way, way up from where it's been. So it's been a tough season for Rick, just because he's got so much energy and he wants to accomplish so much, but it feels like his body has kind of been, working against him in some ways. But he's recovering well now.
because of all that, Johnny and I are going to make the decision that we will officially forgive Rick for not appearing on our podcast until now. We will have compassion and empathy and mercy. No, I heard Rick talking about, you know, he's talked about that brain thing and that adrenaline thing for decades, right? It's crazy, though, that it's, I just assumed that, you know, somehow they'd figured that all out and he was pretty much either used to managing it or good to go. But that's, yeah, that's crazy that he's still having to deal with all those things. Well, I hope that he continues on the mend, and I know that, you know, his desire to do stuff never flags. I mean, that guy's mind is constantly racing. So I'm wondering, Henty, and thanks for that update, by the way, but I'm wondering, what relationship does Saddleback, or does Pastor Rick, or does Purpose Driven, however that's formatted these days, what relationship do they have with small churches across our country? I mean, I could say across the world because of the peace plan, but just in the United States, what kind of a relationship do they have with small churches?
I think Rick has always said this, and it's that his favorite size of the church is when the church is 300 people, because then he could know everybody. He could know their families, he could know their kids, he could know their pets' names. And so really, even though, you know, Saddleback has grown so much, into this broad, big family in so many different locations, Rick's heart has always been with the small church. That's his preference, because he wants to know everybody. He wants to know their families and know their kids and everything. And so really a lot of, I would say almost all of his ministries angle towards like helping smaller churches, you know? And so that's why he makes, you know, a lot of his sermons available, like even his outlines available to pastors. And like when Hurricane Katrina hit, you know, I think Saddleback said, "Hey, we're going to pay you guys salaries, you know, for a year, you know, and we're going to give you, you know, tons and tons of messages for you guys to preach, so you guys can focus on pastoring to your people, you know, pastoring your people." And so Rick's heart really at the end of the day is he loves small churches, and he loves serving small churches and giving them content, you know, that'll be helpful, that'll help them to kickstart, you know, health in their church. Even though, like, you know, we're this really big church, like that God has blessed and he's made really fruitful, you know, by his own grace. At the end of the day, Rick's heart is for small churches and helping small churches to be able to, you know, because we have resources here at Saddleback that other churches don't have. And Rick, I think, has really stewarded those very, very well. And it's not about, you know, making Saddleback's name great. It's about making Christ's name great, regardless of the size of your church.
Yeah.
You know, and helping to have a healthy church, even in my personal conversations with Rick about the church. Those are things that have always come up. Yeah, he definitely loves small churches, even though, you know, we're a part of this big church, and his heart, and I think his ministry is definitely angled towards training and equipping pastors to that end, to help these churches that are small. And yeah, and so, I mean, I know for me, Saddleback is huge, because, I mean, I've grown up in small churches as well. And so when someone says like 200, 300 person church, I'm like, that's big. To me, that's big. Uh-huh. You know, that's very big. But yeah, Rick's heart is definitely with small churches and helping them to grow. So
That's awesome. So, Henty, you're working at the highest level of church administration. Like, you're seeing the whole in a way that a lot of people wouldn't understand. But on a much, much smaller scale, I think that's how a lot of our pastors exist, is because they are their own admin. So they are looking at everything from the top down. What are some, I mean, in your experiences working as an admin in such a large church, what are some of the most common pitfalls? Where does the church and where does the staff? So I'm trying to imagine a pastor who's got an elder board and he's communicating out, or she's communicating out with her elder board, and, you know, trying to get things done this way. From your perspective, what are the most common pitfalls when you're pressing vision down throughout other departments and throughout other leaders?
Oh, man. I don't want to oversimplify it, but I think my experience in obviously a church as big as Saddleback, and, you know, the last church I worked at in Barstown, Kentucky, was, you know, 65 people. It all comes down to communication. It all comes down to the timeliness, the thoroughness, the intentionality in what is communicated. And like, I think one of the blessings in a small church is that you can incorporate more people in terms of the vision and crafting and you know, and really putting vision statements or whatever it is, or that language on the anvil, you know, and let the church work out vision language, vision, you know, pieces that are going to work for the church instead of kind of just handing down, you know, this kind of like, this is how it's going to be. And obviously at a large church, you know, we don't have the luxury of that because, like, you know, how on earth are you supposed to, you know, gather the community leaders of a church of, you know, that has a weekend attendance of 26,000? Like, it's just not possible to do that. The communication, once again, has to be very, very clear, very pointed, and very timely. And so I think, you know, from my little, I guess, spot here, that's something I've seen as it all hinges on that communication. I think it comes to being clear, being intentional, and really working out that language and then being able to, you know, respond to people's questions and then to create a buy-in on some of those items. And so I think that's really been the big thing that I've seen has been super, super important in having a clear vision. And I know, like I said, most people are going to say, man, communication, like, of course. But I'd say, I think it's a problem at small churches. It's a problem at big churches. In a way, I think it's a bit, I don't want to over-theologize it, but, you know, Jesus comes in John 1, you know, and he is the Word. And so we are people of the Word. And so necessarily, like, one of the greatest, you know, and I'm thinking about Romans as well, and, you know, people believe through hearing the Word. People, you know, we're moved by words. We're what we talk, you know, to ourselves about in our minds. It's all words. It would only make sense that it's in words that, you know, things get, quote unquote, lost in translation. And so just creating the space and the time, the patience to let communication happen, let conversations to, you know, be had. And then, you know, once people finally are getting a grasp of it, then moving to, you know, the implementation of a vision or whatever it is. So I think those are the things that I've seen from where I am at the moment.
Would you say that Saddleback is still, like most churches, struggling to get that communication piece right? Or do you think that they've figured that out and they're just, it's kind of in a maintenance mode now? They're just trying to maintain good communication.
Yeah, I think we've done a great job at it. But let's be honest, like, you know, there's seasons where it's great and there's seasons where it's not so great. So obviously there's some very key things for us, obviously, like the purposes, like, you know, we're crystal clear on communication of what we're doing and how we're doing it. Those are kind of timeless principles and truths that tether us down to, you know, to reminding, and not in a bad way, but they ground us. They give us a foundation for how we're going to carry out and kind of the different categories that everything falls into. You know, but then you have broader issues that are coming up in culture. And so sometimes the communication is just missed on that, either because of timing or because it's a difficult issue. And we don't always have the right words or the right understanding to be able to speak clearly into it. And so I think, like I said, at times we do a really great job with it, you know, and then sometimes we kind of miss the mark. But I imagine that's the same case with every church. But I guess when it comes to what are we doing, why are we doing it, and how are we going to do it, I think on those things we're very, very crystal clear. And those are things we can control. You know, we can't control what's going on in culture. We can't control from the outside what's coming in, but we can control, like, what we can do. And that's something that Rick always says, control the controllables. And so what we can control communication-wise, we do. But those other items are, we just have to bring our brightest minds together and kind of begin to tackle some of those things.
Yeah, absolutely. Talk to me for a second about staff conflict. How do you deal with, you know, or how have you watched Rick or whoever is head of HR over there deal with staff conflict? Because you have so many people working closely together and obviously high passion on the topics and the ministries that you're working with. How have you seen people navigate that? And as part of the communication structure, how have you had to interface with that?
And don't use names.
Don't use all the names.
And then Rick said, no, I'm kidding.
Exactly.
I think one of the really meaningful moments in my time at Saddleback was last January. Our entire staff got together at one of our campuses at our Rancho Capistrano campus, and we had a staff vision day, but really it was a staff, like, take care of your heart day. Rick actually led us through this whole thing about, you know, it was like this four-page back and front Just like this litany of questions of, you know, like, how am I actually interacting with God on a daily basis? Essentially saying, like, I can't deal with conflict with other people unless I'm right with God. Rick was saying, like, we've got some stuff we need to deal with. Like, we got some things we got to clean up. But first, we need to make sure that all of our hearts are in the right place. And so I think, you know, that's the way that I've seen it start for us, is that, you know, and Rick has led out in that. And he said, like, let's get our hearts right before before the Lord. And then we can begin to interact with each other and make sure, like, am I living in pride? Am I living in sin? Like, am I living in arrogance? Or, you know, have I truly been wronged in this? Or, you know, am I seeing this situation wrong because I'm, you know, not interacting and I'm not strong in my relationship with Christ? And so the second part of that day was then dealing with staff conflict and how to interact with staff. And so one of the most poignant things that Rick said was, you always lose hope in the middle of the tunnel of conflict. It gets really, really dark and you don't think that there's a way out. So people usually at that point, they avoid and they say, okay, I'm not going to resolve the conflict. I'm just going to leave it as it is. But it's, you know, the way out is through working through the conflict, you know, that we get clarity and we actually come out on the other side of conflict, much more understanding of each other, much more loving, you know, and much more willing to work with other people. So what does that mean in our staff culture? When conflict does come up, we're all fallible people. So sometimes we don't do that very well. We get scared in the middle of the tunnel of conflict.
Sure.
But I think what we try to realize is that, hey, like we're on the same team. Like we all want the same thing. We all want one more for Jesus. And so at some point we have to say, okay, like, is this a personal thing? And is this a personal thing? We need to sort that out. Or is this a methodological thing? Like, are we disagreeing on the how, or identifying, is it a why or a what thing? And the why and the whats are, you know, those are already kind of ironed out for us, but the how we do them, those are things that are subject to change, that, you know, that we can fail fast on, or we can, you know, say, hey, this is working, so let's do this now. So I guess I'm pretty sure that, you know, the most of our staff conflict, it really probably would happen between personality and then how we do things. But yeah, I think, like I said, Rick has really led out in a good way and given us a model for how to do that. And it's to embrace the conflict, you know, not to like relish it and be like, I'm so ready to be in conflict with you, you know, but to say like, hey, like this is an inevitable, necessary part of being in a Genesis 3 world where we don't always get along. And so let's try as best as we can to honor Christ and how we interact with each other, to not, you know, just sell, you know, someone away. I'm imagining, like C.S. Lewis would say, like, you know, we're all these eternal souls. And so if we're willing to disagree and write someone off about a silly point of disagreement, then we're kind of missing the point. You know, like if we're willing to just write someone off for, you know, one point of conflict, then we're missing the point of what Jesus is saying. I think a lot of those things help our staff to work through conflict. And Rick always says this, and not just in regards to conflict, but just in regards to suffering. He says, I've never learned anything from pleasure. I've learned everything from pain. We embrace the fact that it's going to be painful. It's probably going to hurt. But in those moments, that's when God is going to teach us how to serve him better and how to work as a team better, you know, to get one more for Jesus.
That's good, Henty. As we wrap this up, the question that I have for you is a generational one. I mean, Johnny and I are different generations, and churches everywhere, large and small, are having to somehow pass the mantle of leadership and the heart of the church to the next generation. So, you know, Saddleback is so identified with Rick's generation of leadership, and yet I've seen him passing off and forcing his older staff members to pass off leadership and ownership of the church to the next generation. What types of things are you seeing Saddleback doing? I mean, you look like you're probably, what, 23, 25?
Yeah, the latter.
Oh, okay. All right. So you're not 35. Yeah, 20, okay.
No, definitely 25, yeah.
Okay. So as a young guy, I mean, what are you seeing Saddleback doing that you're like, yeah, this is good. This is what church should be like, and this is what churches should be doing? Because, you know, Rick's 40 years older than you. And what are you seeing the church do to give the ownership of the church to the next generation?
Yeah, I think one of the exciting things that our church is doing is that we're pausing for a moment and we're reevaluating everything. we're asking some really tough questions about how do we better minister to the people around us? How do we better anticipate people's needs? You know, we've got so many generations of people in our church. You know, you got boomers and you got millennials, you got Generation X, Generation Z. And so I think necessarily, like, you know, at some point you have to begin to ask difficult questions about, okay, how are we maybe missing the mark on some of this, or how, you know, and so I think that's a process. It's, and I guess in a way for an organization of our size, like it's not like a quick fix. There are no like quick fixes. It's a big, long, drawn out process. And so that's just the process that we've started in the past year or two, where we're digging deep into our team structures and into, you know, the organization of our church, how things are organized, who's communicating with who, so that we can grow in being better and delegating ministry and putting ministry in the hands of our people, you know, and not just hoarding it to ourselves. And so I think that's really the way that Saddleback is handing off ministry to the next generation. That we're creating a culture where we're saying, like, hey, we're not just interested in pastors doing ministry. We are a church of ministers. Everyone, I'm thinking of, you know, of Peter here, 1 Peter 2, you know, like we're all called to this royal priesthood. You know, we're all called, like 2 Corinthians 5, to be ambassadors for Christ. Naturally then, like, it's not just pastors who are called to that, but it's to our people. Our people are called to do that. And so our job then as pastors, you know, Ephesians 4, is to equip the saints for the work of the ministry. So I think, you know, there's leadership development pipelines that we're, you know, beginning to build, to get better at, you know, to perfect, so that the process is more seamless, I guess you could say. But I think one of the really cool things that's happening is just on our campus level, is that a lot of our campus pastors are young guys. Our church is saying, hey, like, develop people, reach out to these people, reach out to people who are your age, but also people who are not your age. And so in a way, it's this embracing of the inevitable multi-generational piece of our church, but also saying, like, once again, the ministry is in the hands of the people, and it's not just in the hands of the pastors. And we definitely try to reflect that with our volunteer culture, and just with how we navigate through all of that. And so those are some of the things that I see our church doing right now to hand off ministry to the next generation. And but once again, it's a long process, and it involves a lot of difficult questions, and our church isn't afraid to kind of answer and to grapple and wrestle with some of those things.
That's awesome, Henty. That's really great. Well, we gotta run now, but we are grateful for your time and for your love for the church. I mean, it's just clear from talking to you how much you care about the local church. And I think Jeff and I have been blessed by this conversation. You could have told me you were 35, and I would have believed it. So there you go. You don't sound so young yourself. But thank you so much, and we hope to talk to you again, Henty.
Thank you, guys. Once again, love the church. Love what all the pastors who are listening to this podcast are doing. Just want to encourage all of them to continue to be faithful. I know it's difficult at times to minister, but Christ calls us to faithfulness, and he will supply the grace and the mercy and all things that pertain to life and godliness in order to be faithful. And so once again, thank you guys for the opportunity. I really appreciate it. And hopefully it's helpful to some of our listeners. So thank you.
Great. Thank you, Henty. And by the way, you tell Pastor Rick that the 200 churches guys are gunning for him. We'll give him a little reprieve while he recuperates.
Jeez Louise.
But he's got to see if he can do a better job than his wife did on our podcast.
And she did
an excellent job, and I don't think he can measure up. So yeah. I'm just saying.
Man. Burn that.
And you tell him he missed.
Him, don't worry.
You tell him he missed the 200th episode. We wanted him on the 200th episode, but we had to settle for NT Wright. When the day comes, just hand them your phone, and we'll just do what you and I just did. It's that easy.
There we go.
All right. Well, hey, thank you. You have a good afternoon.
Thank you. You guys too.
Johnny, Henty, and I had emailed back and forth earlier trying to get Rick on the podcast, and so we developed a little bit of an email connection there, and I said to him, Henty, you know what? Why don't you just join us? We don't need Rick.
Why don't
you just come on?
Exactly.
And talk about what you're doing and talk about small churches, and so he was kind enough to do that. Now, we didn't have a ton of time with him because you and I were pressed on this end.
Right.
But, man, a lot of questions I would have loved to ask him about growing up in, it was South Africa, wasn't it?
Yes. Yeah. He talked about growing up in South Africa. Mm-hmm.
You know, growing up there and what it was like for him as a teenager moving to the United States and what it's like for him now. What are his goals? What are his future plans? There are a lot of questions I would have liked to have asked him. Well, Johnny, I haven't edited that content yet, and I don't know if we're going to include the part about giving Rick Warren such a hard time and about whether or not he'll be able to do as good as his wife did on our podcast.
She was great. She was awesome.
She's actually, I think people like her more than they like Pastor Rick.
You can't blame them. I mean, you really can't.
I don't blame them. I don't blame them. So, hey, if you've never been to the Saddleback website, saddleback.com, purposedriven.com, rickwarren.com, basically churchanything.com will get you to Saddleback, I think.
Absolutely.
Rick claims that Saddleback was the absolute first church ever on the internet.
Wow, that's a bold claim, Rick.
Yeah. Back in like 1992, I think it was.
He might be right if it's back. I would like to see that website. That's why I wish that I could get in the Wayback Internet Machine and go and look at how many spinny globe GIFs were on the Saddleback website.
Oh, there weren't
in 1992.
Any moving anything way back then.
Just text.
No, that was back when people still had CompuServe addresses when they were numbers.
It took 40 minutes to load up the text, and all it said was Sunday mornings at 9 a.m.
Yes. Yeah, that's right. That's right. Well, Johnny, I've got a special announcement, something we've never done on the podcast before.
Come on now. What is it?
At my church, we're looking for a pastor of student ministries.
Oh, yeah.
If I had to sketch my perfect person for this role, he would be between 26 and 32 years old.
Am I just outside? Am I just outside good enough for you, Jeff?
No. You're going to be 33, so by the time you would ever come, you'd be too old.
That's what I mean. I'm outside.
He would have 5 years of youth ministry experience. Okay. He'd be in the process of getting his master's degree, and he would love youth ministry.
Mm.
I'm looking for somebody who could go the rest of my term here with me at Community Heights Church. So I'm looking for a youth pastor who's willing to come for at least 10 years.
Wow.
10 years.
I like you just staring at me. 10 years. Jeff says this because he once pitched me as 5 years, and I did all five, Jeff. Okay, I did all five.
You did all five.
I did not do all five as your student pastor, but I did do all five.
I'm looking for somebody, Johnny, that I can invest more into even than you. Someone that I could, yay, even love more than I loved you as a staff pastor.
That's so hurtful, Jeff. Let me do the pitch for you, okay? Here you go. I'll do the pitch for you.
All right.
Working with Jeff, nothing in my life could have set me up better for future ministry success than working with Jeff. Jeff will pour his whole self into mentoring you and developing you and leading you into becoming the best person and pastor and parent and spouse and all
Keep
of those
going.
Things that
Keep
you can
going.
Be. I mean this genuinely, okay? I mean this genuinely. If you want it, Jeff will give you his whole self and he will teach you things and lead you and mentor you in ways that I just tell you nobody else is going to do. Nobody else is going to lead you the way that Jeff will lead you. So if you listen to this podcast and you are in the range of what Jeff just said, or maybe you're outside that range, but you really think you could be the person to help Jeff take his church to the next level, I'm telling you right now, email him, Jeff, J-E-F-F, at 200churches.com. I hope he gets 10, 15, 20 emails from this, because if you are even remotely thinking about a ministry move, if you're passionate about students and thinking about a ministry move, you're not going to move to a situation better than the situation you're going to find with Jeff. That's a red dead guarantee, and it will be everything that you want it to be. Everything you want to take out of it, you will get out of it. He will pour himself into you. So that's my pitch, Jeff. Email him, Jeff at 200churches.com. I'm not kidding around. I am every day grateful, not just in ministry, in my whole life. I'm every day grateful for what Jeff did for me. And you can get all of that as well, I'm sure, because that's the way he is. He doesn't hold back and he doesn't hold out. So Jeff at 200churches.com, send this man your resume and get on his team ASAP.
Johnny, I'm actually not looking for a pastor of student ministries. I just wanted to hear what you would say. You're like the other woman in your own marriage over there. Come
that's
on,
hilarious.
Man.
Hey, you're not going to be the podcast co-host. Let me tell you that right now. Unless you feel like investing, all of your personal finances in and getting nothing back out of it, then you could be a co-host, I suppose.
However, if they're gifted on a different kind of a podcast,
hey, there you go. You never know.
I could do some podcast coaching and get them off the ground. No, seriously, Johnny, I'm looking for somebody that I can develop, right? That I can
Absolutely.
Pour my life into.
I know what it is, Jeff.
But that can also come along and do the job. Somebody who's passionate
yep.
about youth ministry.
Absolutely.
So we're out there on churchstaffing.com. If you want to go to churchstaffing.com and search for Community Heights Church in Newton, Iowa, you'll find us and you can reply on that. You can send your resume to that, or you could send your resume right to my email address, and I'll forward it on to the lady who's taking care of all that for me. But I do think that if anybody sends me one from our 200 churches listeners, I will take a look at those.
Absolutely.
I'm not going to forward
on
them on without checking them out first.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. I hope you get a bunch. Keep me posted about how many you get, because I think that's a great opportunity. And Newton, I'll say this. Newton's a nice town. How many people? 30,000 in Newton?
15,000.
Okay, it seems bigger, but it's 35 minutes away from the Des Moines Metro, and we got a half a million people in the Des Moines Metro. So you move out, and the town itself is not that big, but it is nice. But you're right next door, 35 minutes away from a town that's got everything. I mean, it's Des Moines. It's got everything that a major metro has. So
I'm 30 minutes from Mercy Hospital in downtown.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's just a great place to come. It's a great place to be, whether you're a small-town person or a big-town person. There's both. I'm done being your salesman. I'm just saying people would be stupid. I lived, no offense to Orange City, I know we have listeners, but I lived in Orange City for 5 years. And I'm not like a small-town person. I lived there for 5 years because of Jeff. You could go live in Newton for 10 years. It's a bigger town, and you'll have a great time. So that's all I've got.
What's exciting to me is the last 10 years we've seen so much advancement, right, in society, technology,
yeah,
all
absolutely.
This stuff. The next 10 years, who knows what it's going to be, but I love giving people opportunity to grow, to expand, to learn, to develop. And I don't want somebody who's going to come and keep their nose down and keep their head down and just do their job here. I want somebody who's willing to do the job here, but then also wants to learn and grow and stretch and test their limits and see what they can do.
Yeah.
Not just here at our church, but to, because our church becomes better when we as staff members are involved beyond the walls of our church into our community. And then into, around the world, for that matter.
You're
so,
getting me. I'm about to apply for this job. My goodness, Jeff. Oh, my word.
Well,
it's
going to be fun.
Oh, man.
We're excited to add to the staff, and likely the following year, very likely, we'll be adding another staff member. So that's going to be exciting. I'm looking forward to this team developing and growing.
I love it, man.
Well, Johnny, thank you for that promo. Thank you for the kind words. The thing is, though, if all that is going to happen to them, they pretty much have to be just like you and do what you did. You got to be a receptor.
They just got to want it. That's what Don't be like.
You got to.
They can have
you
a better personality than me and still get all that. But yes, if they want it, they can have it.
Yeah, and the truth is, I've learned a ton from you. So
sure,
I don't want anybody that I can't learn a whole lot from as well.
There you go.
Because it goes both ways.
There you go, man.
All right, Johnny. That was Henty Vandermeerwe, or however he said it. It was great talking to him. Thank you, Henty, for joining us on the podcast. And we'll see you next week for episode 320 of the 200 Churches podcast.
My name is Angela, and I want to thank you for listening to this episode. If you haven't already, you should subscribe to our weekly email at 200churches.com and to the podcast on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. You know it. We'll be back next week with another amazing and encouraging episode just for you. Until then, may God bless you as you lead and love His church.
What did we say at the end there?
Vandermeerwe?
No. Right at the end of the episode where we were joking about Rick Warren.
How he has to come on and do better than Kay.
I don't know if we're going to keep in all that. I don't know if we're going to include the fodder about...
Wow. This is my first podcast.
I'm nervous. I'm weirdly nervous.
I'm not nervous. I'm inarticulate.
Do you remember the first time, though? It was like, oh.
Oh, yes,
I'm nervous.
Do. Yes. What was I saying?
Are we going to include the fodder about...
Yeah. I know that. I don't know what I was saying before that.
You haven't edited the podcast yet.
Okay. And you and I talked on your cell phone number, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm just going to call you on your cell phone, and we'll just do it that way, because that's going to work better.
Okay. Sounds good. Okay.
So you hang up, and then I'm going to add you in on that call. Let me make sure I've got the right number here. It's the 909 one.
Yeah, that's
4. Okay. I'll call you right back.
All right. Sounds good.
Okay.